Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo and I'm broadcasting to you from the beautiful city of Anchorage, Alaska. And it's just absolutely awesome here. And I think we are going to have a very energetic hour. Why? Because we are going to be giving you some insights on how you can stoke your creative fires. We are going to talk about ways that you can rekindle your passion and your imagination. My guest today is Phil Cousineau. Phil, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be with you.
Now, Phil, are you in San Francisco?
I am at the top of Telegraph Hill listening to the sirens and the foghorns.
Well, it's an awesome place to be, San Francisco. You're quite an interesting man. You're the fellow of the Campbell Foundation. And you have been written up in Newsweek, you've been on CNN, Fox, BBC, NPR, CBS, and so many other aspects of media. I feel very fortunate to have you on my show today. And you have been recognized as an expert on mythology, and you've done all kinds of DVDs. You lectures at Esalen Omega and Jung Centers, and you travel. Holy Moses, do you travel. 20 to 30 cities a year, and you're going to be hosting a new television program called Global Spirit. It's a new 13-part television series on Link TV. And later on in the show, we're going to give your website out, but you're a man that I think has traveled and continues to travel, a very interesting path in life. What made you aware that mythology held a certain kind of magic? Why is it that for you it's so important to energize and stimulate the creative aspect within other people? Why not just focus on yourself? Why do you think other people should know some of these steps to be able to be more creative themselves?
What a wonderful question. What a wonderful way to start off this conversation. See, I grew up in a household sitting on the knee of Homer. That's the old expression for having a house or a home, a family that reads together. My father used to turn off the television on Friday nights, and we would pull out the classics from Homer to Mark Twain and read together. So we grew up in an oral tradition, grew up in a world of art and mythology and travel. But for my mother, I got a slightly different gift, and that is a gift of the spiritual life, and most importantly, a gift of gratitude. I was raised to believe that whatever gift or talent or maybe genius that we have is not enough to celebrate alone. Whatever we have has to be passed on. And I've tried to live a life like that. I've had many great breaks. I've had wonderful teachers like Houston Smith, Robert Johnson, Joseph Campbell, wonderful sports coaches. And now it's my turn to pass on what I know. And I believe that the creative life is the most exciting and vital life that there is. And yet there's a huge pressure on people in contemporary America to lead a selfish life, a life in which you only live for yourself. And the antidote to that is to find a way to share our gift, share our genius. And it seems to me that the most vital life of all is one in which we're living creatively, making things with our own two hands that can help the community, and passing on our gift to young people.
I couldn't agree with you more. However, you have had your own times. Here you've had this wonderful background. You have all of these accomplishments, and yet you have dark nights of the soul. You have had times when your creative stuff just shriveled up and went into air dust. How did you get out of that?
Well, thank you for bringing that up. Ironically, well, two things. As someone who's been a creative artist all his life, I'm one of many, there's a high percentage of us, who do battle depression and melancholy, but a lot of that is self-imposed in this sense. If you're trying to create just off the top of your head, there isn't too much pain and suffering and ordeal there. There are successful formulas in virtually every business, every way of life. You know, you can create the same product that's out there, the same kind of soap, also the same kind of book or song or movie. But the bigger challenge and the much deeper satisfaction is to create something original, something that is unique and that only you can produce in this big wide world. And to do that takes a lot of courage, frankly. It takes a lot of energy. It takes a great deal of stamina to go down into your soul and to bring out something that is tough. Now, my wife constantly says, Phil, couldn't you make a life a little easier on yourself by writing another book like the last one? I mean, it sold well. It got reviewed well. And I suppose I could, but I have a restless imagination, and so I've written on a huge variety of subjects, from architecture to sports, the history of the Olympics, poetry, movies, rock and roll, and most recently, creativity. That's what keeps me alive, to be able to investigate, explore, research, and then write about a topic that sets me on fire. And I've just been able to grow or develop a kind of confidence that if I am passionate about something, chances are I can kindle your passion as well.
I agree with that. That is something I have found, and I've been involved in media for almost 30 years, and there is a difference. When you are with someone that really knows what they're talking about and they have a special affinity for it, they're not just doing it because of the money. They're doing it because there's something within them that has a need to express itself, and it's just as you described in the beginning, it's giving it back. And your association with Joseph Campbell, this is a man who's recognized around the world for the gift he left behind, his legacy about mythology and his perceptions regarding that. And you found in your conversations with him, in all journeys, no matter what culture you go to, in all myths, legends, storytelling on multiple levels, there are three stages of the mythic journey, three acts, as you say in your one sentence in your book, of dramatic structure. What are they?
My old friend Joseph Campbell was a mythologist and a scholar of religion and literature. He studied the Western and Eastern legacies going all the way back to Homer, all the way back to the beginning, and he found something that was held in common in all of these traditions, and he called it the hero's journey, which is a fancy way of saying the adventure of self-knowledge. In other words, you can go through life and not ask a single question about where I came from, why am I here, what am I doing, but if you are the type that wants to know, you're curious, you are going to then go through a journey that has been gone through countless times in human history, and that is, it begins with a sense of separation. The minute you ask any important, vital, profound question, you reverse your pattern and you separate from everything that you knew at one time. That's why all stories begin with a sense of restlessness.
Mm-hmm.
As Jim Morrison in The Doors used to sing, something's wrong, something's not quite right. Do you remember that? So all movies, every book, every story you see in journalism, or the story you hear around the water cooler at work, begins with a kind of shock. Something just changed. And I think that is the greatest human mystery of all. We don't really care how things stay the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
What we are interested in, intrigued about, is how things and people change. So Joe found this three-act structure, very similar to the three-act structure in theater, and that is you separate from the past, you leave home, you go on a long journey in which you may or may not take on a mentor, an ally. You will have to endure a certain amount of tests and obstacles and ordeals. And there's a kind of initiation into this new world. Think about the King Arthur myths and the Dark Forest, or the story of Theseus and the labyrinth with the Minotaur. That's called, what did they used to say in war? Hell is change. Change is hell. If you somehow have the courage to go through this dark night of the soul, you come back with something that used to be described as the boon, B-O-O-N. It's a wonderful old word. I'd love to see it revived. And what it's symbolic of is self-knowledge. It can be a very dramatic journey, let's say like in Apocalypse Now, the movie of Francis Coppola, or it could be a family vacation. It could be a new course you took at college. But whatever you do to bring about change in your life entails a deep struggle, and once you come out of that, you've changed, you've transformed, you've brought a boon back. And I believe that at the core of the world of art, the arts, in music, in drama, sculpture, painting, novels, books, and so on, the common attraction there is this mystery of human change, how people change. And if you can get that story down in a good book, in a movie, in a three-minute song, you will capture the attention of the world.
Yes, that's true. And it is something that whenever in my life, and I've interviewed, my goodness, just in the last 7 years, close to 2,000 people, I go through this, and every single person that I have spoken with, because I always review the material, just like I did yours, they have to have something like that in the story. I don't care if it's designing a better recipe to going to the moon. It doesn't make any difference. It has to have something, in my view, because that is what touches me. And it is something I like to think that I give as a gift to my audience, because I've taken the time to do that. And it is so important when you can do that, because people will say, I got something from that. There is something that touched my heart, my mind. That is what is so very important. I see so many copycats. I see so many people that do the same thing everybody else does, and they are afraid of their own uniqueness. They're afraid of their own individuality. I've been there. I know. And I'm so grateful to have reached the point where I really don't give a hoot one way or the other. I think that comes with maturity. If you gain any wisdom at all, you take joy in the uniqueness that you have. But when you are with a younger person, and there's many adults that are this way, they feel like they've got to be a clone. If they touch that part of themselves, that individuality, that creativity, that means they're going to be different, and maybe they're not going to fit in anymore. And it's scary. It's very scary. And one of the things, there's a couple of things I want to pull out of your book here. Brenda Uhland, you gave a quote from her. She said, there's only one you. Consequently, if you speak or write from yourself, you cannot help being original. So remember two things. You're talented and you are original. You're talented and you're original. I thought that was wonderful. Also, that when you want to ignite your fire, that you have to be focused. It takes focused practice, determined practice of the thing you love until you do it right, until it becomes natural, until it becomes a habit, until it becomes an expression of you. And Martha Graham said, whether it means to learn to dance by practicing dancing or to learn to live by practicing living. Those words are so rich in their wisdom, and yet with their simplicity, many times people will say, I can't do that. So that's what we're wanting to talk about today, is how we can let go of those fears of being creative, of maybe learning how to do the tango, or painting puce green frogs with, you know, antennae. It's okay. We can do things like this. It's good.
Whoa, that's a mouthful. Yes, yes. You might recall that in the book, I explore the origin of the very word create. I love doing this in all my books and in my talks. it's good to have a common language, right?
Absolutely.
And so I thought I knew the etymologies of most of the important words, but this one startled me. Create comes from an old Latin word that simply means to grow.
Ooh.
The secondary meaning is to make order out of chaos. But right there, you have the gist of my book and this whole way of thinking, that the people who seem to be happiest, the people that seem to be most vital around us, and really through human history, are those who are constantly growing. And how do you grow? You grow by creating things. In other words, digesting the world, digesting your own experience, and then turning it into an artifact. Call it a song, a piece of sculpture, clay, glasswork, a story in a book. But it's also a way to make order. Life is chaotic, right? There's a tremendous amount, a tsunami of information and possible experience coming our way at every given moment. But can you put your stamp on it? Can you say something original? I believe that there is an impulse in all of us to tell our story. Look at kids. Early grades, kindergarten, the first few grades, almost all children are natural artists, natural storytellers, and then that impulse is squashed in the interest of conformity. Now, God bless our teachers. We know their classroom can be chaotic, so we have to have some rules. However, in the interest of conformity, we tend to push creativity out of people. And by the time they reach middle age, it's gone, and we've ended up turning into a culture of voyeurs. The whole reality TV business, or the impulse never to draw or to sing in our life and let someone else do it, is really unnatural, and I think it's the first time in human history where people have been this passive. So in my book, I'm not saying anything new. I think the reading of it will be a constant, a reminder over and over again of what is simply a natural impulse in all of us. It's there when we return from a journey, right? Who doesn't want to tell a story when they've come back from a journey, a trip, a vacation?
Oh, absolutely. That's what you get together for at a coffee shop or whatever. You want to hear the stories. You want to hear all kinds of stories. Why is it? Because we're all looking for that interconnectedness
that shows us,
number one, we're not alone.
And it shows and two, also what we have in common.
Yes.
And every day in the media, we're reminded about all the differences between us around the world. But if you turn to a movie, a theater performance, anything in the arts, you find out, my gosh, they believed that, they felt that in Iceland 1,000 years ago or in South America 15 years ago. You read a novel by Isabel Allende, who is from Chile in South America, but her situation, her problems are a woman can speak to someone in Anchorage, Alaska tonight.
That's right.
And that is a miracle to me. But you know how she does that? I was just on a panel with her here in San Francisco for a travel writers conference, and she says basically the same thing as the quote you just read. She said, the way that I reach people around the world is by being honest. And she says, even fiercely honest. And it's difficult because we're all used to doing things and saying things to please others, right? And the things we write may not please them, but it can move them. And I think that's one of the differences between artists and other people. It's this uncanny ability to move someone else's heart. Isn't that a miracle?
I think it's incredible.
That's a couple hundred years old and realize that your heart is pumping faster because of the beauty of this piece. Well, if you have the talent to do that, then you can't turn away from it. Do you know what I mean? William Saroyan, the great writer, he wrote The Man on the Flying Trapeze. He once said, a writer is someone who can't write. Do you feel the power of that double negative in there? That there is an impulse, once you've told a story that really raised somebody's eyebrows, or you've painted something that brought tears to someone's eyes, or you can sing in a way that can move a room, you know why you're here. You're here to pass on a gift and to help move the rest of the population.
Speaking of moving the population, I want to touch on some of the exercises in your book, Stoking the Creative Fires, 9 Ways to Rekindle Passion and Imagination. I think sometimes, you know, we all have different experiences in life, but I liked this one exercise, and you've got many of them through the book, and I know we're not going to have time to talk about all of them. But one of the exercises is, first, imagine, dream a painting, then paint the dream. And you say, this is what you can do. At random, pick a book off your bookshelf, open it and choose a line or two, learn the words by heart or write them down on an index card. And then take the words for a walk. And I thought, that is so cool. You pick a quote and or whatever. Maybe a kid says something to you, and you write those little words down, those little pieces of black ink or blue ink or whatever ink color you want to use, on a piece of paper, and you take those words for a walk. You take them, and then all of a sudden you have to write something about those words. What does it stimulate inside of you? What does it mean? Why does it touch you? What is the stimulus inside the mind? What a great exercise for a classroom.
Well, I'm so happy that that speaks to you because I use it in my creativity workshops. Just last weekend, I was giving a presentation in Seattle at the Jung Society, and I put the class through this, and it worked. It was amazing how many people opened a book completely at random. This is called bibliomancy, by the way. Divination through books.
I've used it. It works.
It's a venerable old practice. It's at least 2,000 years old. Anyway, I had my class go through this, and one after the other gasped, sighed. They shouted out, "How does this book know what I feel?" So why put someone through this? You see, this book, Stoking the Creative Fires, is for people who are temporarily lost or stuck or confused with their creativity, and we all go through it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Better if you are a superstar. I read where Laurence Olivier got nauseous before every performance on stage. Can you imagine? Laurence Olivier. So there is nervousness for people in the beginning stage, but also in the veteran and accomplished stage. The question is always, how do you keep moving?
Mm-hmm.
So one of my many suggestions in this new book is to go outside yourself. Try to do a little juke move, as they say in basketball, a little fake move on your own ego. Do you know why? Because your ego will constantly come up with ways to say, hey, you're not good enough. Who do you think you are? Or there isn't enough time today. Or there isn't enough money in the bank. How can you be so self-indulgent? So the ego needs to be quieted.
Mm-hmm.
And one way to do that is through this terrific old trick called bibliomancy, where you write at random, or you wake up first thing in the morning, and the words that are in your mind as you're waking up, and there always are. It could be the last straggling little scene from a dream, or you're waking up and you hear a sound from the garbage man picking up your garbage outside. But you do what you just read. You take those words out for a walk. And I'll tell you, it's one of the most exciting aspects of being a writer for me, because there's a common misconception, maybe you've heard it too, that writers just know what they want to write when they sit down and they just get it on the page. Well,
that's not hardly ever the case, is it? That's true. It's not true.
It's mostly exploration. You are jazzed, you're galvanized, you're catalyzed by something, and you go explore with words or paint or music. So I got that line, by the way. It's a kind of a paraphrase from the wonderful painter Paul Klee, who once said, drawing is no more than taking a line out for a walk.
Oh, I like that.
Is that magical and playful? So now I've adapted that for the words. You take a word or a phrase. One of my favorite sources is cafe conversation.
Mm-hmm.
If you just listen in your local cafe, there is a starting point for 100 short stories. in any cafe. You just take that out for a walk. Here's another common example. And again, these are exercises to help people who are temporarily stuck. They're playful ways of just nudging you along. So you keep going. You keep breathing. You keep creating. And this, I learned this from Matisse, the great painter, who writes that he used to sit in those wonderful street side cafes in Paris, you know, the ones that are faced out towards the street?
Oh, yes.
Which makes cafe sitting immediately a piece of theater.
Mm-hmm.
The seats aren't facing in an insular manner, they're facing out. And so Matisse was able to develop this incredible practice of being able to sketch someone in the few seconds it would take them to walk from the right-hand side of their vision and walk out of their vision on the left side. Now imagine having a discipline in which you could sketch somebody. What would it take? 15, 20, 25 quick little lines, but capture their essence that quickly. I find that to be a wonderful metaphor and a kind of challenge for any of us who want to create something, that we have these capacities inside us. We have these capacities to tell stories, to paint, to sing, that are rarely tapped in our culture because we've become such a, how can you say it? Again, a voyeuristic culture where we allow other people to tell our stories and sing our songs.
Mm-hmm. And we need to not do it. I know our time is just getting away, but it's just such a joy to chat with you because I think creativity is better than bread as a staff of life because you can make better bread if you are creative, if you allow yourself to nourish that part of you in whatever venue is appropriate to you, then that really works. But you talk in here about how you want to stretch time like an India rubber man and not be its victim. And I loved this because you talk about Malaysians that you've met through your travels who claim they can stretch their rubber time to fit their needs rather than complain about not having enough of it. That is a profound kind of understanding.
Yes, and I think it cuts to the heart of my whole argument in this book. You see, besides writing and filming, I've also been really, really blessed to be a consultant to first-time novelists or someone mid-career in painting, but also the Hollywood studios. I'm doing a lot of consultation down at Warner Brothers and 20th Century Fox. And guess what? The problems for first-timers and Hollywood studios are basically the same. Over and over again, it's time and space, time and space, time and space. When will I find the time? Oh, I have no time. I'm busy, 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 or I don't have the space. The kids are in the living room. Where can I write? Or my wife is using my studio for the laundry room now. Well, those are the two big obstacles, but there is a way to move around it, like with the dancer's grace. And so I find this wonderful metaphor from Indonesia to be useful. So here's an example. Someone calls you and says, do you have time for dinner tonight? I'm living out here in California now, so I can say from experience that it's socially frowned upon to actually say, oh, I'm free. And the reason is because it sounds out here in Silicon Valley like you're not ambitious, not successful. Isn't that wacky?
So,
a whole culture of people out here who are saying, I'm busy. Oh, you can't imagine how busy I am. Oh, I don't think I can see you for weeks and weeks. I'm so busy. Because the inference then is you are really important if you're busy. So now that is not the common practice around the world. And it's a huge trap for people who are trying to be creative and actually make something like a book or a movie. So what I've been trying to practice is this idea of rubber time. So someone says, Phil, do you have time for dinner tonight? And even if I'm busy, I'm on deadline for a book or I have a conference call. The other graceful way of responding to it is, I will make time.
Good.
Maybe I will go to bed a little bit later. I'll get up a little bit earlier. There is a way to stretch it so that you're not a time victim. Do you know what I mean by time victim is when you...
Oh, yes.
And, oh, my gosh, I'm so busy. Well, it might very well be true, but I know from the world of the arts that the most creative people are the busiest people, and they seem to have a sense of absolute ease about it. It's a little bit like Hemingway's famous phrase that courage is grace under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a kind of standard for people if they want to really be in a creative life. Can you be the eye of the hurricane? Can you be calm? Think about a painter like Vermeer. Do you like Vermeer's paintings?
Oh, very much so.
Oh, my gosh. To me, they are one of the great sublime contributions to the human race. And you look at the almost preternatural peace in the characters in these paintings, the milkmaid pouring the milk and the woman with the blue letter and so on. And then if you didn't know better, you'd stop to think, well, he must have had an absolutely peaceful, calm life with no problems and so on. And then you read a little bit and you find out he had 16 children.
That'd be enough to give me a headache for a long time.
Oh.
I would hope they had a Starbucks somewhere
gosh.
I could go to.
Yeah. And that the city where he painted all those astounding paintings actually burnt to the ground when he was in middle age. There were fires, there were wars, and yet somehow he, like I think we have to find, a certain peace that we can go back to and create a little bit every day. And that's what I suggest to people, rather than you completely turn your life upside down and say, I am now going to write the great American novel, I'm going to quit my job, and I'm going to change all my friends, and so on, and move to Paris. That rarely happens. It's the same reason why 95% of people on diets quit after 2 weeks. In the arts, the equivalent is, I believe, start out in a manageable way. Say you'll write 20 minutes a day, or you'll paint for 15 minutes, but make almost a religious worthy vow of it. And the reason that's important is because we're talking about your soul. We're not talking about a commodity here. The real creativity comes from your soul, not just the brain or the mind. And that's why it feels so delicate and fragile, and why often people find it hard to be criticized, right?
Well, Phil, I have to tell you, we are out of time. And
oh,
so we're going to have to say goodbye for today, but your material is wonderful. Stoking the Creative Fires, 9 Ways to Rekindle Passion and Imagination. Phil has a website that you can go to, Phil Cousineau, and that's PhilCousineau. Phil, thank you so much for being my guest. It's been a delight. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTaP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and guess what? Telephone lines? Yes, sir, yes, ma'am. Those telephone lines are open. If you would like to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, I would be delighted to do exactly that. Remember, I am an information resource for those of you who are new listeners to this broadcast. What I do is when you call in, I like to have your first name or initial. Of course, I always want to know where you're calling in from. And then let me do what I do best. I'll give you an intuitive insight. And after that, you're welcome to ask me a question about anything or anyone that you desire. Very simple, lots of fun, and it's my joy to be able to share my skills with you. Here are the telephone numbers to call in to, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. So any of those numbers, give me a buzz, and I'll be glad to give you insights into what's going on in your life, and perhaps maybe you have even some personal challenges you'd like to talk about. So just know you can reach me at 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756, or 530-876-3222. Now, I do want to give you some information about events that are coming up that I am going to be participating in. For those of you listening in the state of Washington, on the 27th of September, I will be appearing at the Boeing Parapsychology Expo. I will be doing many consultations for people, and I appreciate the emails from those of you who are wanting to find out about all of the information. And I want to say go to their website, the Boeing Parapsychology Expo. Type it into Google near search engine, and it'll pop up with their website. This is being held in Kent, Washington at Kent Commons. The hours, everything that you need to know is going to be right there on their website. I will have a booth there myself. I also will be bringing an abundant array of books that you will have an opportunity to purchase if you so desire. So I will be there. Then I'm going to be on my way. Yes, this microphone is going to be traveling to Tampa, Florida. I'm going to be there doing a live broadcast with the Teresa Tapp seminar that's going to be going on in that area, and we are going to be broadcasting live from that event, bringing you insights and, gee, some real support about how you can be physically fit, you can tone up, trim up, and all you need is 15 minutes a day. Then, in the middle of October, I'm going to be going down into San Francisco. So I will be appearing at the Wisdom Festival there, and this is an event that if you are in Northern California, you don't want to miss it. There are so many wonderful people coming in from all over the country. There are products, services from all over the world that you will be able to view, and there are all of these wonderful subjects that are going to be presented in various forums, and it's a great environment at Fort Mason in San Francisco. Go to the wisdomfestival.com website, and you will get all of the specifics. I'm so pleased and delighted to be a part of this. And again, I'm also going to be one of the speakers there. But I invite you to tell your friends, if you know of anybody that's in that area, the Wisdom Festival is the 17th, 18th, and 19th of October. And what a fun place to be, and just wonderful, wonderful opportunities to learn things that perhaps you've had a curiosity about, and there's just so much choice. You can't beat it for opportunity. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. Now, I just wanted to put out a little test for you. Do you have a favorite shape? Now, when I'm saying this, I'm talking about squares, rectangles, circles, triangles, or squiggles. Well, think about it. Are any one of those your preference? What do you prefer? The square, the rectangle, the triangle, the squiggles, or circles? Maybe you like all of them. Well, after a while, I'll tell you how, through research, they've found people that have particular preferences. It tells a little bit about them. So in a few minutes, I will be sharing that with you. Also, have a pad of paper handy because I have got a recipe for candied asparagus. It's just to die for. So it's real simple, real easy on not just the pocketbook, but the waistline. And, oh, your taste buds are just going to do the tango. But before I do that, I wanted to share something with you. I think it's so important to, after you get bombarded every day with how much is wrong with the world, to spend some time to recognize some people that are really making a difference. And you're not going to find them written up on the front pages of the tabloids because they're not doing anything destructive. What they're doing is constructive. But I feel that they need to have recognition. And what I wanted to do was share this information with you. And it's about Chip Felix's garden. And Chip had never, ever planted a garden. That was the last thing he was interested in, period. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. Now, 7 years ago, he ended up moving, because of his work, to Pittstown, New Jersey. Now, this is an area of the U.S. where there's a lot of farms, and they call them working farms. And he said he sort of got bitten by the grow-it-yourself bug, and he decided that he was going to lease a 30-by-30-foot plot. Now, when you think about that, that doesn't sound like much, but boy, can you grow a lot in a 30-by-30-foot plot. And what he found is he could plant tomatoes, zucchini, cucumbers, eggplant. And he thought, this is going to be great. I can plant enough food where I can feed my family for the summer. To his amazement, he ended up with so much food, he couldn't give it away. And finally, he ended up finding a local food pantry. And by the time his harvest was finished, he had donated 120 pounds of fresh vegetables to his local food pantry for the poor. So he decided he was going to take on a project. The very next year, he ended up talking some people into volunteering and working with him. And they said, okay, and he found some land. And he started what's called America's Grow a Row. And this is what happened. They ended up planting, tending, and harvesting 1,500 pounds of fresh vegetables. And he donated all of this to the local food banks. Before he knew it, he had over 100 volunteers, and he needed more land. So he contacted a company called Peaceful Valley Orchards in Pittstown. And he talked to the people that owned this and said, would you mind donating some of your land so we can grow some produce? This is what I've done. This is what's evolved. So we can donate to the food banks. And they said, okay, go ahead and do that. Now, remember I told you before he had some volunteers? People got so excited about being able to participate in this project. He had close to 1,000 people volunteer their time this year. They plow, they fertilize the land, they donate seeds, seedlings, equipment. Now it has developed into this nonprofit community farm supported by all kinds of people. They start with their spring planting and it goes through late October. This year, by the end of October, they are estimating that they will have donated 250,000 pounds of fresh produce to food banks. And they said, you know what? Families are involved, and we rotate the families so that everybody can have a turn at doing this. It is an amazing project. Do you know they've got kids involved in this? The kids don't whine. They don't complain about getting dirty. Everybody is in there, and they just have a great time. And what has happened is that it's made a difference in the lives of everyone that's participating, because they're feeling like they're contributing something to their community. I think people like Chip need to be recognized. Now, if you're interested in knowing about this, just look up the information about America's Grow a Row. America's Grow a Row. And I think you're going to find that their information is great. Maybe you'd want to start something like this in your own community. Maybe you're not in farmland community, but maybe there's a plot of earth somewhere in a local park or whatever that could be utilized. This is something that could be done around the world. There's a lot of people that need food, and there's always a call for it. What a wonderful way to involve the community and people in a very, very positive, healthy activity. So I had to share that. I like recognizing people like this because I think it's important. They're making a difference, and they're affecting the lives of people, enabling them to realize that there's hope, that there's something that they can do. And hard work is all part of the equation, and it's worth it. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't forget you can give me a buzz at 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. We're going to be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi. Well, if you listen to the show regularly, you know I'm often talking about studies and research and this, that, or the other. Well, guess what? Yes, I was mentioning to you about squares, rectangles, triangles, squiggles, and circles. Well, your preference for any one of these forms or all of them gives an insight into who you are. There's always somebody out there doing research somewhere and saying, gee, this is what I discovered. Well, if you're a person, let's say you doodle and you like to draw squares, you're a very solid type of a personality. That's right. They might even compare you to a rock. But it doesn't mean you're square. It represents order. You really like to have everything in its place and a place for everything. And people can rely on you. They can depend on you. You're always going to be there for the people that you love. Now, what if you prefer triangles? What if you like drawing those three sides and points? Typically, you're going to be more of the leadership type of thinking. You want to strive to be your very best in everything you do. You're ambitious, you're focused, and you are willing to take over if necessary. And, of course, for those of you that have been into the study of symbolism. The triangle often has been associated with spirituality. And it means also you can be very, very level-headed in stressful situations. If you enjoy doing rectangles, you plan on doing things. It's typically considered a figure in flux. It's a square that stretches and moves to form a new shape. You're the type of person that's curious and adventurous. You're not afraid to test yourself and try new things. And you believe life is to be lived. You like adventures. And you want to see what is out there for you. So that's very positive. Squiggles. If you just like all those squiggly lines, you are artistic big time. You are a person that just loves exploring as many directions as possible. And you are constantly stretching yourself to be able to reach for bigger and better. Also, you are a good motivator for other people because you demonstrate. You do. You like to be able to not just talk the talk, but you like to be able to walk the walk. And the last most common symbol is the circle. Typically, people that like to draw a lot of circles are caretakers. Why is that the case? Well, it's like a never-ending, continuous action. And you like having people close to you. You like to be able to use your intuition. You are very intelligent. And you know what? I'd say, folks, you probably, each and every one of you, could relate to every one of these symbols. So just understand that you've all got these qualities that were representative in this study. It's not an either or. Remember, there's so much more to you than perhaps you've ever dared to explore, and I would like to encourage you to do that exploration. It is so great. Okay, if you've got that pad of paper and pen handy, let's go for candied asparagus. This is one of my favorite vegetables. This is so easy, but oh, the flavors just cannot be beat. Now, this is enough to serve four people, but you might be a little piggy when it comes to vegetables like me, and maybe you just want to make this for yourself and a spouse or your favorite person in life, because if they like asparagus as much as you do, then they're going to want to have not just a few of these, but a whole bunch. Now, what you're going to need is about a pound of asparagus, and of course, you're going to wash them and trim them. You're going to need about 3 tablespoons of olive oil, which are going to be divided up. You're going to need 1 small shallot, peeled and chopped. You can also use a scallion if you want, and you just, you know, peel and chop that too. You're going to need 1 orange. You want to zest that orange, and you want to juice it. And then you want to have 2 tablespoons of maple syrup. Use the real stuff, not the artificial. It makes a difference. And 1 teaspoon of chopped chipotle peppers in adobo sauce. And you can find that at your local grocery store. Or you might want to make a substitute. But this is how simple it is. You want to heat up your grill or broiler. You want to brush your asparagus with 1 tablespoon of the olive oil. Sprinkle it with a little salt if you want to have some salt. And you grill them for 3 minutes. Until they're tender, and you have to watch them because they cook very, very quickly. Then in a skillet over medium-high heat, while that's going on, you want to cook your shallots and 1 teaspoon of orange zest in the olive oil that's remaining for about 2 minutes until they're nice and tender. Then what you do is you stir in 1/4 cup of your orange juice, maple syrup, and your chipotle peppers. Cook for 2 minutes until it's nicely heated through. Your asparagus are all cooked. They're nice and warm. Put them on a serving platter. Drizzle them with the orange sauce. And if you want, garnish it with a little bit of your orange zest. Ooh, flavor's good. Yum. And it won't expand your waistline. Well, I know we're just about out of time, but before we go, I want to let you know the lineup that we've got for next week. We're going to be talking about the mental environment with Bob Gebelein. And then we're going to have an open mic day on Tuesday. Russell Targ is going to be my guest, this world-renowned expert with the paranormal, dealing with telepathy, who has worked with the CIA. He's going to be my guest. Do you see what I see? That's on Wednesdays. Doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs, Tom Benjay, a repeat guest, wonderful man. We're going to be talking about Native Americans and their accomplishments, and Bill George, True North, is a book that he wrote, and now he's got a workbook out, and we're going to be discussing that, too. We've got a wonderful lineup of people. Tell your friends, and if you miss a show, know you can always listen to us on the archives right here on bbsradio.com. This is Donna Sebo, broadcasting live from Anchorage, Alaska. I'll be back in my own home turf on Monday. Have a fabulous weekend. Bye for now.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.